Speaker's Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Erin, who is here to speak with us about her experience of participating in the group coaching, Living the Privileged Environment at Home. Welcome, Erin.
Hi.
Hey, thank you
for
being
with us.
How are you? Good, good. Sorry about the. I know from experience the controls on the radio show can delay, so I think my unmuting was way behind yours, so thanks for hanging in
okay.
there. Yeah. So, yes, you have participated in the recent Living the Privileged Environment at Home group coaching, and so we'd love to hear your experience of that, what you saw as you participated in that, the insights and awarenesses and that sort of thing that you had.
Well, I'll say the first thing is I've attended a lot of the Sunday workshops, and you all talk about the privileged environment, and I didn't really have context, so I was thinking of it a little bit anthropologically, and then the class came up, and so I thought, this is great. I'm going to get to learn what they're talking about. And so essentially over 4 weeks, you know, we're learning various concepts that can help sort of bring awareness and, for me anyway, like calm in your daily life, in your daily activities. There's like a bit of homework, and the final bit of homework was to, you know, make a sign about the things that we've learned and put them up in some place where you would see them. So I actually made a sign of the guidance and put it up in my office near where I work every day. And I found, like, initially I would look at it right at the moment where I needed to hear the thing that it said on the sign. You know, right, like in the middle of a meeting or a call where I really needed to, like, you know, keep custody of my attention, for example. It was just striking to me how those few simple things could keep bringing me back. And that simple sign in my office kept bringing me back and making just even my work life better.
Just that simple reminder of essentially where you wanted your attention to be, sounds like.
Yeah. And I, another thing that sort of happened spontaneously is I'm always trying to find things for my teenager to do that are helpful for the world. So I said, you know, can you make me a sign that puts this sentence on the sign? And he said, sure. And then he wanted to understand what the statement meant. So with my children, I explained it to them, and they were really kind of agog, like, what? Okay, so we had to have a whole big discussion, and that was fun too, because there's not a lot of opportunity to talk with my family about this practice, so it just sort of happened to allow us to have a discussion about it.
And it sounds like a very organic way. So instead of, okay, now mom's going to try to impose this new thing that she's learning, right? And it just becomes one more thing that that we're all going to rebel against. Instead, it just sparked a discussion.
Yeah, because if there's anything that I've learned, I give them too many opportunities to rebel against me. I try to avoid that at all costs. Yeah. But
We've all been on both sides of that.
Yeah, I think the big thing for me is, like, the four sort of, you know, things that we talked about, I just keep, it's amazing to me how I just keep turning my view to seeing the sign and go, oh, okay, now, let's try that, let's try this. And it helps me. Like, even today I was writing up some work that you normally is very, I torture myself over how challenging it can be, and I just kept saying to myself, you're here. It's fine. You'll be here. Yeah. It's fine. And I really feels like that was brought on by this sort of reminder in the room.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to give away, of course, too much of it, because hopefully this is really a powerful offering, and hopefully it'll be offered again. But I think we could probably risk having you say, what was the one that you put up on your poster? Would you mind saying what that principle is that you're working with?
Well, I mean, the big one is, for me, which is really what I first saw in this practice, which led me to participate at the level I am, which is you know, the idea that, you know, we need to employ the one rule, and the one rule being we use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer so we can drop it and end suffering. And that's just been in my brain a lot. I've only been with you. I haven't done this for particularly long, but that message keeps sort of filtering through me. I needed to hear that. Yes. And
it's incredibly powerful.
So, yes, very. So from like actually heavy, intense things that I need to drop to like the simple things like, Erin, you've written, you know, 50 articles in your life. This is no problem. You know, like, so every opportunity, like this is, you know, let's just let that go and just do the work that we're doing right now.
Yeah. Because essentially what you're pointing at is that one rule reminds us that ego is going to use everything that comes into our lives. Mm-hmm. It's going to find a way to create suffering, and it's going to do that in the conversation. And when we employ the one rule, which is that we'll use all of that happens to see how that's happening, to see the process of suffering that happens, and to drop it, which is the key piece that it sounds like that sign is helping to facilitate for you, and that the whole offering facilitated for you is making that choice available to you. You know what? I've written many articles before. I don't need to get all into a conversation with conditioned mind about this. I can drop that and come back here.
Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to, in my life, like find that gap where I can catch it and just say, you did it again. Oh, okay. There it is again. Interesting. Yep. Notice. Saw it. Okay, great.
Exactly. Interesting.
Bye. Yep. And back to writing.
Yeah, no judgment.
Yeah.
No, like, wow, again, you're doing that? Nope. Just, interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I'm definitely starting to see the game of it, you know, like, oh, gotcha.
Yes. Exactly. And it's such a powerful offering, this group coaching, because of course the privilege environment is incredibly powerful, and we couldn't do practice without it. We just couldn't, because almost everything in societies tend to be set up to support ego. You know, everyone's walking around in that conversation in their head. And so everything around us tends to support that. So the privilege environment is the structure that supports us to turn the attention inward, which is the movement you're describing. And then what happens to people often is, well, you know, if they've come on retreat and they really experience the power of the privileged environment, it feels like, you know, I can't live in that because I can't live at the monastery. But that to realize it's not a thing, it's not a particular structure. It doesn't necessarily mean I'm not talking to anyone or I'm not, but the principles of the structure are something that we can carry with us through our days. And that's exactly what you're describing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and, you know, I'm living a life probably a lot of people are. I'm working at home. Kids are, well, now they're out of school, but they weren't in school. We have pets. Right. We've got, you know, all the things, and I'm trying to work. So I've been struggling there. And so this helps. I want to say one more thing, which is made me think of, you know, well, people probably find this. I mean, that's why we listen to these calls and that's why we take the workshops. But, there were things said in the group by other members of the class that really stuck with me. I was like, would never have thought of it that way. And I was so grateful for just the comments and the, you know, that people would say in the class itself.
Yes. It so fills out the experience, doesn't it? And as you say, I can completely resonate with it, and I never would have thought about it that way. I never would have seen it that way, and that opens up a whole other possibility for me in seeing that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I know it's not what we do here, but I wish I could send that participant like a love note. Thank you. You gave me some.
Yes, exactly.
I will always think about that.
You do know the thing you can do with that, Erin, yeah? Which
what,
is what? Record that to Erin. Right? Because all of that, what you're projecting onto that other participant, I mean, that's kind of the final loop of the magic of Sangha, is people say these things and they, you know, they talk about things and we just see so much in it for ourselves and we project everything onto these folks, which is very likely true about them. And we can also say, gosh, that's obviously in Aaron because I'm the one seeing it. And then we can make a recording appreciating Aaron in the same way we wish we could send that note to the person.
Right. You're right. You're right. I will do that.
Yeah. So fun. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, Aaron, thank you for being with us today to talk about your experience because, again, for exactly the reason you're talking about, you know, this really, hopefully other folks will hear this, it really sparks for them. And then when that offering is next available, that people might want to sign up and have their own experience.
I hope so.
Yeah. Great.
Thank you,
Aaron.
Very much.
Okay. Take good care.
Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Aaron. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry. Sherry, are you there? Okay, you look unmuted
to
me. Oh, there
muted.
You are.
I know. I forgot. I was busy listening to Jen and Aaron and lost track. Yeah. Wasn't that great?
It was great.
I love that first thing Aaron started off with, right? We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer so we can drop that in suffering. That's it, right? That is the whole deal right there. And then everything we do, it's like there's the sentence, and then, you know, I've been on my diagramming sentence jag lately. You know, everything about practice fits under that, right?
Yes.
That's our reason.
Yes, yes. And to me, it's so beautiful, almost mathematically and logically, that there's one principle that can be applied to every moment and every situation. I mean, to me, that's the beauty of practice.
Yes, it's so simple. And that's where we laugh when because everybody in practice gets there sooner or later when they hear the voice say, "Oh, yeah, but it can't be that simple." Like, yeah, actually, it can. It really is.
Yes, yeah. And then it's just applying the nuances to the every, you know, quote, complex situation, confusing situation that I come across, if I remember, then I can turn to that.
Yeah, and that's the other one that kind of goes under that is every situation, every conversation in conditioned mind comes down to something wrong, not enough.
Yes.
Right? When we get the hang of that, then that's what we start looking for. How is that? Oh, yeah, there it is. Okay, that's it. Yeah, and I love the, you know, put the sign up on the wall and then just return to that, which is where, of course, the discipline comes in, because sooner or later, ego is going to figure out a way to get me to decide I need to redecorate my office, and that sign really does need to come down, and I don't even notice that I did it, right? But that's okay, because I can put up another sign as soon as I catch on to what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's
yes,
so
indeed.
Good.
And I've been appreciating how that something wrong, not enough, has been woven into the year-long retreat for this month.
Yeah.
And the focus on giving.
Yeah.
It's genius.
Yeah, really, it's really good. And, of course, the whole point of their conversation, which is the privileged environment, which is the thing about this practice, I think, that most distinguishes it from every other practice, and it is truly the reason that it works. It's the reason that we all love each other as we do, because that's all we know of one another, that we get together and we practice. That's it.
Yes.
We don't go have dinner together and then find out that, ooh, I really, really, you think that? Really? You know, huh? No, I don't really. I've actually realized I don't like you. Yeah. So we don't do any of that personality stuff together, and so we only know the best of one another, which is happens to be what and who we are. It works out really nicely.
Yes. Yes. And I just saw, as you were describing that the privileged environment is set up to keep ego out.
Yes, precisely. It's like that's the lock on the gate. Nope.
Yes.
No room for that. I know you know this, but my favorite precept of all of our precepts is not to speak ill of this religion or any other. I like them all, but I particularly like that one because it has that same tone to it. There's no room for ego and ego's opinions and being right and knowing and all of those kinds of things. You just don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's a beautiful practice.
It really is. I like it a lot. It's been good to me.
Yes, me too. It's like, oh yeah, I'm seeing it again for the first time.
Yeah. Very good. Do we have some? I bet you have announcements.
How did you guess?
Well, I've done this once or twice.
Okay. Join us this Sunday, July 12th, for a series of fun exercises as we practice becoming aware of how we are and who we are and allowing ourselves to be exactly as we are. The How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything workshop is free of charge, but please register by 12 noon this Friday, July 10th.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yes. Yes.
Starts at 10 o'clock, I bet, huh?
I believe so. But that would be my
guess. I bet it does. I'd be shocked if it doesn't.
Yes, and as we heard about from Aaron and Jen earlier, bring the kind, compassionate support of the privileged environment into your daily life through a 4-week group coaching class beginning in August. Participants in the Living the Privileged Environment at Home class will engage in specific practices that support being present. The virtual class will be held on Mondays, August 3rd through 24th.
Wow. I can see. There actually was a little plan to offer that class again, clearly.
Yes. And for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders, if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, please press *6 and then 1 to make a show and get in the queue. And a conversation on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes is great.
Perfect. Thank you, sir.
Perfect. You're welcome. I think we are ready here.
I think so.
Okay, here we go.
All right.
First caller. You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry. This is Diane in Colorado.
Hey, Diane.
Well, hello.
Hey, and I had all kinds of things to say, but I have nothing to say.
I see,
yeah.
So we can go in either direction.
We can go in any direction. I just don't know which direction to go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the giving thing and the year-long retreat is very interesting and challenging for me. It's been interesting to hear what other Sangha members are saying about it, and much of that rings true to me, that I get caught up in I'd like to but I can't, which is a pretty common theme. And the not enough theme of not enough time, not enough energy, not enough money,
mm-hmm.
over and over again. And I get that that's coming from ego, and I get that when I go up against that and say, you know, okay, fine, but I'm going to do it anyway. that a result that ego wouldn't have predicted occurs. and I really appreciate, I was listening to one of the calls today, and I really appreciated the observation that you've made a million times, but, you know, sometimes it strikes one as new.
Absolutely.
That it's all about the future. Like, I can't give that away because I might need it in the future, but I don't need it now. So I'm creating suffering about this imaginary future when I might need that and not be able to obtain it, you know, whatever the heck it is. And for me, the financial piece gets, the conditioning around that is huge.
That you need to be, I'm guessing, really careful now because who knows what's going to happen in the future.
Yes, I am. I am extremely frugal. Just ask my daughter. and it's the, well, there's enough for today, but what about tomorrow?
Yeah, and there has always been enough for today, but there's this imaginary tomorrow. And of course, the point that struck you in that previous call was, so I could, if I get caught by that, I could wind up suffering every day of my life as I prepare for an eventuality that may never materialize.
Yes, and then ego will come in and say, well, you know, the reason why it hasn't materialized is because you've been such a good steward all along. So then it gets me with that one.
Yeah, and of course, if we could just talk to millions of people currently who would say, that's bogus. I was also a really good steward, and then this event happened, and right, because that's the story that we hear constantly, people who are homeless, and you know, they were like us, and then some event happened in their life, and they just weren't able to maintain themselves in the face of that. So that idea that we can. It's one of my favorite things. So I'm at an age where my parents grew up in the Depression, and so I was always fascinated by the Depression because it seemed to me like what people could have learned out of the Depression is let's enjoy it now because we have no idea when it's all going to go away, which is what happened to people, right? It's what's happening to people now, of course, right? But that's not what people learned. What people learned is to be super frugal, even to hoard, as if that would prevent what happened before when those two actually didn't go together.
Well, maybe you're just having a conversation with my ego right now. You know, big surprise. Never done that before. I'm not sure. You know, I think I haven't worked for almost 3 years because of an accident I had. And if I hadn't been frugal, I would have lost my house. I would have, you know, if my rainy day fund had not been robust, I would be in a very different situation now than I am. And I'm grateful for those actions that I took year after year after year to spend way less than I made.
Okay, let me ask you this. Did you suffer during those times?
No.
Yeah. And so why?
I didn't, because
now?
I actually kind of like being frugal.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't. That does not surprise me at all. And so why have that as an issue? I mean, I can understand why your daughter has it as an issue, but why would you?
Well, because I can take it further than it needs to go.
well, now that's there. Now we're kind of closing in on the whole deal, aren't we? Because there is being frugal. So I always describe myself as a screaming liberal who is fiscally conservative. Okay, and so those go together nicely for me. So I want to be absolutely responsible with, of course, in a position like mine, that's a really good idea since everything we have is something people have given us, right? So to be very, very careful and conservative with that, with what we have, but not to the point that it makes life unhappy or unpleasant. And so what you're closing in on, it seems to me, is where is that ego line? Yes, you do want to be frugal. You do want to take care of what you have and be responsible. Yes, absolutely. But where is that line when it crosses over into now it's about making you unhappy?
Yeah. And yeah, and determining where that line is not so clear, and then factoring giving in.
Well, I bet it is so clear, Diane. I bet it is.
Yeah?
Because, yeah. Because it's always clear. Because it's when the voices get, it's when the voices get strident. That's how we can tell. That's how we know we've moved into ego land, because the clarity that you want to make sure that you keep the house, right? That your daughter gets to go to school, that you have food on the table, all of those kinds of things. I mean, that's just intelligent. That's just responsible. But when you want to make a choice and the voices go crazy, that's how you can know that you're on the ego line. Because life, the intelligence that animates us, doesn't go crazy.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. I feel like the voices actually don't go crazy, or I guess their way of going crazy is paralysis by analysis, which is another thing.
Yeah.
People have talked about on the calls. It's like, yeah, I'd like to give to a million places, and I can't. So how do I figure out which ones? And then, you know, you get into
that's exactly right
noodling thing.
That's it. Yep. And so as we talked about on the morning show, so clearly that makes you the right person because you're being very careful and responsible and that sort of thing. And then it sounds like a lot of the other person. Then you wind up not giving anything because, well, it just didn't quite, and you don't know, and then of course you get on the other side of the duality and get a beating because you're ungenerous.
Yeah, I get stuck in the how do I choose?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so, you would say I would imagine it doesn't matter.
Go ahead. Well, it doesn't. And so I just said to somebody this very afternoon, there were four choices to be made, okay? So four possibilities. Write them on a piece of paper, put them in a bowl, pick one out, and go with it. It doesn't matter. Oh, and I forgot the other part
that goes
with that. Yeah, and then the next part of that is, and never think about it again. That's a significant piece of it, too.
Yeah, that's a huge piece. That's the hardest
piece. You just say, good job, Diane. All right, way to go. Next.
Yeah, that's the place where ego really gets me. I could pick it out of the hat and go for it, but then the beatings that would ensue would be huge.
That's right, and that is something... That, you know, I'm loath to say it this way, but it is the truth. If there is anything that we have control over as human beings, we have control over that. you do not have to ever allow yourself to be beaten. Ever. Ever. And it is a question of allowing. Those voices beating people, it's a question of people allowing it. It doesn't have to happen. And, of course, I'm a big advocate of stop it. Just don't allow it.
Yep, redirect the attention.
That's
I'm getting better at it.
That's it. There you go. And you redirect your attention to that recording that says what a great job you're doing and lays out the practice principles and how you're following them and what you're seeing about that and how your choice is not to allow that conversation in the head to indulge that. Nope, we're not doing that. Let's talk about all the good stuff. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for that support.
You're going to let me know how it goes, huh?
I will.
All right. Thanks, Diane.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Diane. And I appreciated that conversation. And Sherry, I just love looking at seeing the same process in myself and the same content in myself. And it's just so helpful to hear it in other people and get a little distance.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And that the comfort of, God, we are all exactly alike, aren't we? Because those voices would like us to believe that I'm the only one who's like that. You know, everybody else is doing fine. You, yeah, there's something really. And then we get together and have these kinds of conversations. Go, yeah, okay, it's a program.
It's funny. That reminds me. I used to worry about being crazy or going crazy. And then I realized, oh, my goodness, we're all crazy. What is there to worry about?
That's really? Right. Let's enjoy it.
Yeah, just enjoy it.
And you know, Michael, that's a really important point because I would bet for me and thee and probably almost anybody who would ever hear this conversation that we're having, we know that compared to the way people are supposed to be, we would be perceived as crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't, our values, our principles, our interests, our pursuits,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's just, we are outside the mainstream, whatever the heck that is, what is defined as normal and the right way to be and that sort of thing. And so why not really embrace that and enjoy it?
Mm-hmm.
And then follow that.
Mm-hmm.
Follow that instead of then listening to a voice that says, yeah, but you're this way and this way. Yes, I am. Yes, I am that way. Yes, it's true. And these are all of the ways that go with that.
Huh? Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Fabulous. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Rita from Ontario.
Hi, Rita.
Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello? Hi, this is Rita from Ontario.
Hi, Rita.
Can
What's
you hear
going
me?
On?
Hi.
Yes, perfectly.
Okay, wonderful. Oh, it's so great to be on. I wanted to talk about... meditating with when you have trouble breathing and the breath is not a place to come back to or feels like a harder place to come back to when you're trying to be
Rita,
present.
Rita,
yes.
do you have a physical condition that makes that the case, are you saying? Or are you saying that when you're
yes.
meditating, it feels like you can't breathe?
Oh, that's interesting. No, I have lifelong asthma, and it's gotten worse in the last couple of years. And so meditating, you know, it felt like I'd gotten to a really good place with it, and counting up and back to 10 was just sort of something I could key into really, really, really easily, I would say. And and then I started having trouble breathing. And when I would start to focus on the breath, and I would feel, I feel like I'm very, very attuned to any change in my breathing that way. And I would instantly sort of get identified with a story of just panicking and my mind just going, I guess, crazy, feeling, and not being able to, I guess it felt like not being able to come back to the breath, and it felt like the farthest place from center.
That's an interesting one, because over the years I've taught countless numbers of people to meditate, and countless numbers of those people have gotten to the a similar place to the one that you're describing, where there's something that happens, and it goes with just the way you laid it out. You know, you get to this place where you sit down, and you're just, boom, here you are, right? You're just, you're counting the breath, and you're here, and you're centered, and, you know, and then something happens. So it's either, you know, my back is so painful, or my knees hurt, or, you know, I can't swallow, or I think I'm going to faint, or those kinds of things. And then what happens, of course, is that attention focuses on that, as you've noticed, and then suddenly you're not able to have that experience of sitting that was so easy, and I'm projecting, pleasant, delightful.
Oh, it was great. Yeah, that was a big thing, too,
well,
getting...
See, Rita,
Yeah,
that's what you did wrong. You loved it, and of course, for ego, that you can't have that. And so if it's something like breathing, anything like that. I mean, I'm not going to minimize the person who thinks they're going to faint or throw up or or they're in some kind of pain or that sort, whatever it is. And the thing that we can notice is it fits really well with us, right? So I wouldn't be troubled by a feeling that I couldn't breathe. I went through that, as many, many people do, but there's nothing behind it. You know, all that was happening for me is suddenly I'm paying attention to something that the body knows how to do, but the mind thinks now it's going to be in control of that. Right. And so then breathing becomes self-conscious so now the head is going to breathe the body, and it's a very unpleasant, uncomfortable place. But I don't have anything physically going on that would make me concerned about the breath. So I could go right through that and on to the next. For me, it was falling asleep. Right. And falling on fear that I'll fall over and hit my head against the wall. So the encouragement with this is, first of all, to have that context, right? That, of course, the ego is going to do this to you. And to know that you are going to be all right, right? Because you're fine when you're up walking around, right? You're fine when you're sleeping.
It took 2 years for that to drop in just recently. It was like, wait a second, I haven't dropped dead.
Right.
I'm still here.
Right.
There must be something working. Yeah.
Exactly. So Rita, when you're sitting, where do you focus? So when you say you come back to the breath, where is your attention in the body?
Before this all happened, you mean?
Yeah.
Like before the breathing, it was always on the breath. Like I could really key into the breath,
in your chest,
worked really well for me.
In your lungs, or did you drop it down
into
lower belly?
I don't remember. I remember the focus being more on the counting itself than the body so much. And now it's really shifted to however my, what my airway feels like.
Okay. So it's more up in the throat.
Yes.
In the top
of
the lungs.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So now because you sound like a gutsy kind of a gal. And, so you're going to, take this on as a challenge, right? And get to the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so my encouragement would be to drop the attention down into the hara, into the lower abdomen, and keep the attention there. Don't worry about what the throat and the lungs, the upper lungs and all of that are doing. Even the lower lobes of the lung, just don't worry about what the lungs are doing. But allow yourself to keep your attention in the lower part of the abdomen, and then go ahead and do your counting. And you can feel the lower abs, the belly kind of expands and contracts. Now, whether I don't think there's actually any air down there, but that's what it feels like, right? As you contract those abdominals, and it kind of pushes up against the lungs and expels the air and then expands. And so try that for a while. And just see, and that all you're doing with this is focusing on the process just to see what happens. Because the thing that's going to really serve you is that you're going to get a lot of clarity about how ego is trying to control you, trying to make you afraid, trying to get you up into a conversation in your head. And that's kind of the bottom line of awareness practice anyway, is for us to realize that, it's always trying to do that. And it's always trying to find something. It's like just what we were talking about with Diane, right, with finances, right? So it's whatever it can use to get us away from the moment and into looking to it so that it can have our attention.
Yes.
Good?
Yeah. Yes.
And then, again, you'll let me know, right? Do that for a while and then give a call back and we'll see where you are and what the next steps are. Very exciting.
Sounds great.
Yeah,
thank you so much for that. I really appreciate that. And
Meditation should be exciting. We want to, it's the way we get to see the whole thing. And that's where you're positioned right now. So that's great. All right, take good care of yourself.
You cut out a little bit, but I think we're okay.
All right.
I'll give that a try.
Michael,
much.
Can
really
you hear both
it.
Of us?
I can hear Sherry.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Was Rita cutting out for you?
Yes, a little bit at the end there.
Oh, okay.
And if she's still listening, I will tell her that she can go to the recording, which will be there, and she can get the last little bit of that, of what you shared there.
All right. Good. Thank you, Michael.
Sure. And I really appreciated how you went in depth to look at what meditation is. Where does it feel in the body? What is the mind doing? It's so fascinating just to go deeper and deeper and deeper and.
Yeah, it's our laboratory. It's where we can become the scientists who are doing the experiments that are required to save a human being from suffering. How does suffering happen? That's back to Aaron, right? We're going to use everything in our experience to see how. Yeah. And so how does that process happen, and how do we free ourselves from it? That's without a sitting practice. And, of course, that's why ego is so dedicated to getting people not to meditate, right? Because, that's where the battle lines get drawn. And ego can talk almost everybody out of seeing through what it's doing to keep a person in suffering. But if we're tenacious and willing and interested, then it is a fascinating workshop.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Lovely. And Sherry, we are going to hear from our recording and listening program, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. RL is based on a radical idea that rather than being lost in a conversation and conditioned mind, we can live in a conversation about what's true, what's real, what's arising in life in the moment. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report that finding refuge in my own voice and strengthening the awareness of the mentor is both transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply email rltrainer@livingcompassion.org. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence with the support of recording and listening.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Sherry, I wanted to remind our callers that there's an app for the iPhone, which is great for recording and listening, and it's called Practice Recorder, and it's for sale in the iPhone's App Store.
Right.
Yes, again, that's called Practice Recorder.
Makes it easy.
Yes, it does. That's my experience. And we have another caller here.
Good.
Yes. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Christina in Southern California.
Hey, Christina.
Oh, Christina?
Hi. Oh, it's so good
What's
to be here.
What's going on with you?
Well, I'm actually seeking guidance on some content that's been coming up kind of off and on for a couple of months, or actually really all year. And that is that I am now the mother of a teenager. My
oh,
eldest
dear.
has become a teen. And I'm thoroughly convinced that teenagers really know exactly where I need to practice. At my own behavior.
Yes, they've been watching you, you know. They've been watching you closely for a really long time.
Exactly. So, yeah. And so I noticed this morning in an interaction that, or maybe it was last night, I can't remember anymore, that I responded in this way that was really defensive to something where my child, this human being that I adore, was just trying to tell me that I, when I was listening to her, that she wasn't feeling heard, that she was feeling maybe judged, or she couldn't articulate it. And my response was, I'm doing the best I can, you know, like really defensive and, you know, what did you want me to do?
Yeah.
Or say, you know?
Yeah.
And afterward, of course, you know, what was so clear is that part of me needs the same support that she needs. And, you know, that part of me that loves her and gets bombarded by something's wrong, right, and I'm not able to fix it, I need to find a way to fix it, and I'm just off in that world. And there's not one ounce of me as a human being, as a parent, that wants to harm her. And so there's just so much packed into that, that I just want to be that compassionate listener you know, that doesn't take anything personally. And at the same time, I'm just very much a human being too. So I don't
well,
know.
Well, yes. Yes, Christina, that's the awful part to me about parenting. And for me, it's the hope that, let's see how to say this, but you'll be around when she has children.
Right, yeah.
You see, and that's the first time that she'll actually realize that you were just a human being trying your best, right? Because for her, she's, you know, you're her mother. And you've always been the perfect person. Is that true?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And she wanted to please you, and your opinion was everything. And then she gets to be a teenager, and she moves out of that. My mother is the most wonderful person in the world because of all of the things that are going on with her, and that, you know, where we kid about if she didn't go through this, she would be living with you for the rest of your life. And which nobody actually wants. And so it's all perfectly natural. It's just that she doesn't have any idea where you are.
Right. And I don't want her to have to. You know what I mean? I mean, I want her to grow up.
Except I think you do, actually. Because what you want her to do is to grow up knowing that being a human being is a challenging endeavor.
Mm, yeah.
Which you have the opportunity to model for her.
Yeah, that's so interesting because I'm conditioned to not want her to have to see, you know, or to have to experience how difficult it is. I'm not saying that's what I believe or maybe it's what I believe. I don't know, but it's not what I know. It's just that it's the conditioning. Yeah. You know, I want to control it for her. I want to fix it.
You want to be the perfect person so that she has the perfect life experience.
And also because then it also doesn't make me doubt my parenting. I mean, there's a whole lot of ego tied up into it.
Yes, of course there is. But I actually wasn't going to bring that up. But yes, of course there is. And I still believe or I project that's a secondary response. Mm. You know, the first thing that you want is for her to have a perfect life experience. You've been wanting that for what, 13 years now or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And that's really not going to change. And it was easier for you to feel like you were providing that for her or that you had the ability to assist her to have the life that you want for this child that you love so much. And now that it's not easy.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you two are in a completely different place. And the reason that I'm taking this direction with it is because when I hear from a parent, you know, I just want to be able to be that compassionate. That is the fast track to hell. It really is, because it's not going to go that way. Right. And so if what it turns out to be is you just live in a world of self-hatred because you cannot be the perfect, unconditionally loving, compassionate parent that you would like to be, then that's what she's going to actually grow up with.
Mm.
But to me, the happy alternative is, what if she has a chance to be in a relationship with a human being who is growing and changing and learning just as she is.
Yeah, so what I hear you saying is that everything's okay, and that, you know, even when I'm responding from a conditioned place or from feeling rejected or whatever it is, that, you know, I think last night when this happened, I went in and, you know, I said to her, you know, this is how I was feeling, and this is, I made it about me, and that's where I am, and I'm sorry if it hurts your feelings, and that's, you know, that's just the way it is, and we're doing the best we can, and yeah.
Yes, and so, yes, you can apologize, and you can do what you did, which is to let her see your process, right? That you're right. I got really defensive, and that's not how I want to be, but sometimes I am. And
right.
So could we try this again? Because I really do want to hear what you have to say. I do. I want to be able to be there and listen and hear you. And so give me another chance. And I have a feeling she'll be quite open to doing that.
Maybe.
At some point, right?
Oh, you don't think so?
No, I think she will. I mean, maybe not in that moment she wouldn't have been, but, you know, I mean, yeah. Teenagers are, I mean, not all teenagers, I don't know all of them. I know one in particular very well, or I'm getting to know her well. And, you know, I mean, they're pretty self-absorbed. And I don't, you know, it's...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, Christina, like the rest of us, they're not just one way.
Yes, of course.
And, yeah. Right. And so, you know, just to take, it's going to require you really to be as present as you can possibly be all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not assuming anything, because it's a whole new world.
Yeah.
So where does that leave you?
I don't know. I mean, I absolutely know that I have the willingness to practice presence and to, you know, utilize the tools that I have, and that, you know, there's that, I just don't know where, like, what precisely I can do to assist, and I'm not sure that what I need is, like, something else to do, you know, so I just,
no,
I
agree.
Yeah,
I'm
not really
I
sure.
Agree. Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah. And sometimes I think we forget that we can apply all of the same things that we are able to draw upon in the rest of our lives. I mean, there's a way you are at work.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
You don't just relax and just... come from whatever conversation might be going on in your head at the time.
Right.
And that could serve us, right? In these kinds of very loaded situations.
Right. Yeah, that did occur to me. I think about how, you know, I am often confronted with angry, you know, upset people, and I don't take any of it personally. It's very easy for me to stay
right.
Present and centered. But with my child, you know,
That's right.
It's much harder. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Well, it has been.
It has.
It may not continue to be.
Right.
Because it's realizing these are new circumstances, and so you're going to have to be attentive to new circumstances.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
It's not it's not that there's something wrong because it's been this way and now it's this way. It's just now it's this way.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And I did find myself trying to link things and figure out, you know, I wanted to fix it and just, and I, if there's anything I can do, it's just letting go of the need to fix and to, yeah, I guess that's where I can look. What am I trying to fix?
Yes. Right, exactly. And it's so tempting because it's been like this. This is how we've been.
Right.
This is the family dynamic. This is our relationship. Now it's this. I don't like this. I don't want this. I want it to be like that, but it's not like that. And it's very unlikely ever to be like that again, except in moments.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Well, you are so welcome. Stay in touch, huh?
I will.
This is the equivalent of deciding at some point that going into the monastery would be a really good thing to do, and then you get there. Right? You unpack your bags, you look around and go, what has happened here? Yeah.
That's right.
So now you're in the monastery of motherhood.
Yes. And, you know, this is one slice of it, really. You know, and
oh yes,
yeah. There's just so much more to all of it. So, yeah.
Yes, so much opportunity.
Yeah,
so much to see. And again, back to that. This is new terrain for both of you.
Yeah.
Now it's a completely new relationship. And now you two get to work out how that's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's exciting.
It is. Mm-hmm. I'll get there.
Yeah. Yeah, you will. I have faith in you. All right. Thanks, Christina.
Good night, Kasia.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Christina. Sherry, that conversation reminded me of a quote about parenting. I can't remember where I heard it exactly. It's a given that you're going to screw up your kids. So do it in the way that's most comfortable for you.
That's right.
Maybe I heard it from you. I don't remember.
Yes, you did. Somebody said that in the very first personal growth workshop that I ever attended. Our therapist said that. I thought, now those are words to live by.
It just takes all the pressure off.
Oh, it really does. And what do you want? You know, do you want your kids to be all twisted up with, you know, guilt and self-hating voices but just to grow up with happy, relaxed parents? Wow. And you can grow up and, you know, you can be a happy, relaxed adult and then maybe a happy, relaxed parent. I think it's very sound advice.
And we have time for one more caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jennifer in San Diego.
Jennifer.
Hello, Jennifer.
Hi there. It's funny, I had a question, but I've been listening instead of just reformulating my question the entire time other people have been talking with you.
What a notion,
so there's progress. I know. I'm actually so happy right now. So I don't exactly have a formulated question, but I do have – I recently did the Socratic class with you, and I have – something did just come up just now, which was about – oh my gosh, I'm losing that too. And the voices, they could have a ball with this, but I'm telling them to stop it.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Take your time. Sir. We're not in a hurry.
Well, thank you. That's so funny. The last caller reminded me of something. That's exactly okay. So the classes that I've been taking, I'm about to start a buddy listening, reflective listening thing, and I'm often doing the Sunday
workshops, and I find everything really valuable. And then I find this one of the voices saying, okay, that's enough work. You know, take a break. And even with sitting, I sit not every morning, but almost every morning. And I have a really great partner, and we usually sit together. And it's like, but can I take a break today? You know, like we take a little vacation. It's like, well, let's take a break from sitting. And I had this real flash one day of like, oh, the ego voices want to take away, just like you say, they want to take away what's actually really good and helpful. And it's such a constant voice of it's work, it's work, it's work, it's a drudgery. Mm-hmm. So I guess I wanted to ask about.
Well, Jennifer, that. It is for ego.
Well,
right? I mean, ego is having to work really hard. It needs a break. God. I mean, if all you're doing is practicing and you're sitting every morning and, you know, come on.
Oh, that's great. That's so great. Oh, my gosh.
It makes total sense, though, doesn't it?
It is so backwards to what the voices are trying to make me think that it's making me laugh because it's so absurd.
Yeah.
It's just, that's really great.
Yeah,
and you're right. When they start screaming, that's when you know. Go ahead.
That's you've got them. You have them in your sights. Yeah. So people will come on retreat, and remember the old days when we used to be able to go on retreat. And
it just in time.
And about day three, you know, the voices are just freaking out. They're, you know, God, I'm exhausted. I am exhausted. This paying attention all the time, it's exhausting. But that's not the retreatant, right? That's ego.
Mm-mm.
But if we're not clear about who's me and who's ego, then I'm just exhausted. This paying attention, you can't pay attention all the time. My God.
Exact, and on retreat, it turned into abject terror the second night, I think it was, when I went to the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat. Abject terror. And then, you know, thank God everyone around you is reminding you that it's okay to be present. Nothing bad is going to happen. And taking that into regular life it's a practice, isn't it? Oh, goodness.
Yeah. And so when that happens, Jennifer, what do you have practice that supports you in that? I mean, can you make a recording that tells you how much better your life is with practice? Or?
But the ego hates my recorder the most of all and makes sure it's in my bag somewhere. I don't want to get it. And it hates the recorder the most of everything. I'll sit, I'll meditate, I make deals with the voices sometimes. If you'll shut up as long as I do this, I'll let you play the word game for half an hour. But then that turns into I'm on my phone for an hour, not half an hour. And the recorder is the last thing. I think that was my original question. What is it about the recording? It's just like the last frontier. Those voices are just like, don't do it. Don't do it. How dare you undo us? And so I don't know how. Okay, well,
that's
I guess
exactly
reaching
it.
For it is just the only answer.
With
then,
with the Socratic email class, I don't think we ever did it. I can't remember because I don't think I followed through, but I wanted to send out a little note to people with some of the things that people said in that class. I don't know if you read other people's responses, but some of the things people said about what recording and listening has done for their lives. I mean, it is the end of suffering, that which is exactly why ego fights that. It's just the way you say, you know, okay, you can meditate. Go ahead and meditate. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and sit. That's okay. Mm-hmm. But don't record.
Right.
Don't record.
Right.
And that's the kind of deal that it's willing to make. And, of course, before recording and listening came along, the battle line was sitting. You know, it would do anything to keep people from sitting. Yeah. But now, sitting, okay, all right, because we can work with that. But recording and listening, there's ego has no right. defense against it. It's just,
that's
yeah,
so
the big kibosh. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to watch for that and scream.
And the thing that's going to make the difference when you have done it enough that that no matter what the voices say, they can't stop you because you love it.
Oh, I'm having such a... Okay, so when I made my son practice clarinet because he was gifted, but he was not practicing, then he got to this place where it was his love and it was nothing could separate him from it. Doing that for myself is so mysterious, but it's not. That's the voice that's saying that.
No.
It's pick up the recorder.
That's exactly right. That's exactly
until
right.
you know how much you love it and it's yours.
That's right.
And to be that
that's
encouragement.
Right.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the
oh,
same so exact process. So you will do for the love of others what you would never be willing to do for yourself. That's what that points at. You would do it for your son, no matter how he rolled his eyes or, you know, hated you, whatever it was. You would do it because, whoa. Michael, is that? Michael?
I was hearing that,
hear that
also. I did hear that, yes.
Jennifer, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Uh-oh, it's Jennifer.
Okay, I'm still here, but...
I hear you now, Jennifer.
Now we hear you. You were behind a very bizarre sound there for a little while.
Oh, yeah, like with Rita.
There you are.
Well, but I like that. I can do for myself. But pick up the recorder. I can't do it just by thinking I'm doing it. That's the trick right there.
Because thank you. it's being that that unconditional love and acceptance for yourself.
Mm.
It as Buddhists. So if I'm talking to a Christian, the thing that they can understand is it's talking to Jesus. You know, you talk to Jesus, Jesus talks back to you, there you have it. Does that really happen? Yeah, that really does happen. But for Buddhists, we just call it the mentor. It's the wisdom, love, and compassion that is authentic nature. And, we can have that kind of relationship.
No, so. That's great.
Ego is not excited about it, but we are.
But we are. Oh, gosh, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jennifer. Take care.
Okay.
Good night.
Okay, bye-bye. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jennifer. And thank you, Sherry. And thank you, everyone. It was a fabulous show.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, everyone. Let's all go happy.
Yes, and don't forget to treasure yourself.
And don't forget to treasure yourself. There you go.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Sherry.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.